weird. He's like, so I have your passport here. I'm like, so, and does it, because I leave in like 2 days. Does it have a visa in it? Yes. I'm like, can you guarantee my safety into America? Pause. No, I cannot.
Hey folks, we're about to kick off with this week's podcast. Before we kick it off, here's a nice little philosophy moment with my pal, Andre King Comedy. Enjoy.
Whoa, this is my Kiwi life.
Just because you don't always get what you want when you want it, doesn't mean you don't get exactly what you need. Regardless of what you think, try to remember, the universe doesn't work to your schedule. You are a part of the whole, not the center of it.
Hey friends, here we go with this week's episode of My Kiwi Life. Thank you to everyone for listening, downloading. If you're new to the show, this episode is great for you. So what we do on this podcast is we talk about the missing link between what's happening inside our heads, bodies, minds, on Earth. Is there something else outside of Earth? We don't know, but we're here to talk it through. We're at least built to talk. Let's do that, okay? We're probably built for fighting and stuff too, but we don't really focus on that. There's enough of that craziness in the world. We're just trying to open ourselves up to this idea that, hey, maybe the other perspective is there's something in it for me too. Instead of closing ourselves off, instead of making teams, putting yourself on a team where you can't, you know, have any other opinions, I think that's danger zones. So here on My Kiwi Life, we open all perspectives up for a conversation. Now, this week's guest, Slavko Martinov, is that right, Crawford? Slavko Martinov. You know me, I'm not the best at preparing, so this is on the fly a bit as I pull out my bit of paper. Slavko Martinov. Yes, I got it right. So he's a Kiwi fella, grew up in Christchurch, and basically has made this film. It's called Propaganda. It's a, how would you describe it? It's a North Korean, it's a pretend film as if it's come out of North Korea, and it's a commentary on the West, all the craziness that Western culture is putting into our brains to keep us numb, to keep us doing what the man wants. So Slavko picked up on this. He doesn't, you know, want any BS. He just went out to find, what is propaganda? He AKAs it as public relations, which is really interesting for me because, you know, we all do it, don't we? We're all little public relations masters, and that's what Slavko talks about in the podcast. Anyway, we go over all of some awesome stuff. It's a long podcast, so maybe listen to it on the way to work, on the way home, maybe a few walks during the week to get the oxygen levels up in the body. We really appreciate you being here. Enjoy this chat with Slavko Martinov here on My Kiwi Life. Hugs to you all, man. Giant group hug.
My Kiwi Life, let's play the game of life today. My Kiwi Life, the ups and downs we live each day. This is my Kiwi Life. Oh, this is my Kiwi Life.
I don't think that there's ever been a more important time than now for people having conversations, because purely the act of you asking questions and people being not forced but encouraged to voice their opinions and discuss things is possibly the most important way to affect change.
The idea of questions being off limits is a kind of a crazy concept, which I think we sort of see in this whole like internet age, with like, you know, people say things that the internet doesn't agree with, and they sort of will pile on them and say, you can't say that. This kind of stifling of free speech is strange, and it's under the guise of that like progressive.
Also, it's kind of like everyone's got their own opinion, which to themselves it's easy to justify at a small level. Like a friend of mine was telling me, he was on the board of trustees at his local school, And he was saying, okay, they almost voted in no kids climbing trees. And I guess from one perspective, it's actually quite clever because you don't want kids to hurt themselves. But no one stood up and said, that's part of it. You've got to hurt yourself. You know, that was forgotten. So something changes for, and I you know, I always talk about it, that this idea of the large group, and that we're way more dumb.
Yeah.
If it's just two or three, maybe you can come up with a reasonable thing.
Yeah, I've found myself, I've been so busy working on this new film, and I've tried to be really disciplined and just focusing on the edit each day, and the end of each day just being quiet and going for a run and staying focused, because I tend to be off doing too many things. But I have found myself finding razors on my tongue that I've forgotten for a while. And, you know, just in social media posts when it comes to the TPP, for example, and just the blind faith, I mean, almost willful ignorance of people going, actually not even thinking at all, and taking a default position of just ridiculing protesters. And so I have to start off saying, regardless of what you think, your democracy that you enjoy functions and moves forward only because some people hold government or the state or power to account.
Yes.
It's a vital form, you know, function of democracy. In fact, the reason we exist as we do is because people over and over have asked a question, even one person starting with it, and some people having the courage to at least listen or think or become informed. Really, really basic.
Right. Yeah.
And you have to, and I'm always very kind and gentle about it. I don't think there's any, you know, if you start name calling or reduce yourself to that, it just turns into a shit fest. So really polite and encouraging, I find, works for some people.
Well, it's
and then finish by asking them a question and going, you know, did you manage to have a chance to look at the article by so-and-so? You might find it really interesting.
Mm. Well, it's like, it's side-picking, right? Like, they've picked a side. This idea of, like, you voted for certain people or something like that. You've now picked that side and you have to support.
Well, you have bias towards what you do.
You have to support that
because
side.
Because your entire value and belief system is now... pitched in that camp.
It's the idea of this whole, like, groupthink, you know, of, like, I belong to a certain type of, like, if you consider yourself a leftist or a rightist, then you have to kind of agree with all those points that those people make.
Well, also, you have the human emotion of, I'm going to let someone down. For example, if you decided this morning you don't want to come in, Crawford, for the podcast, imagine you're dealing with those things. You're like, wait, I've changed my mind. Talking to Slavko is the worst idea ever. But you have almost committed to the point where, oh, I better go.
You're so brave.
Yeah.
You made it. Well done.
You guys were earlier than me.
We'd be already going.
I tried to show up early.
I thought we were already rolling. Is there something more formal?
No, we're rolling.
It's very informal. We'll come back and do it.
You don't have a little musical jingle that starts it off?
Well, we do.
Cut that in later.
We cut that in later. You know about cutting stuff in. What about cutting stuff out in your propaganda film? Was there a director's cut?
Good question. Don't think anyone's asked that before. Well,
yes.
Well done.
Scoop.
I'd written that so completely, like, you know, when you're writing, I think it was on the 26th draft of the script that I'm like, I'm happy here with this. As it stands, I'm now ready to show it to a friend of mine who's like an award-winning script writer, and he's just brutal. Like, once you show him something, if it's not good, you're done, you know. So it was a real, like, scary moment. And I hand it to him a few days later. He comes back and he goes, it's good. And for him, that's like your mum picking you up and telling you she loves you and giving you a bit of cake and putting a little birthday hat on you, and you're the best thing in the world, you know. He goes, but the second to last chapter is completely gone, removed. I'm like, really? No, I see what you're saying. And so there's an entire chapter just before the end that's just disappeared, quite rightly. Annie, just a couple of points. He said, you can't say that about Elvis. I won't have it.
And I'm like, wow.
As a thank you for going over my script. Play nice with Elvis, but not too nice.
He's in there, though.
That's right.
He's in there, but with the drug addict comment.
I wasn't that nice to start with. Yeah. Anyway, what was the question? Director's cut. Yeah, no, it was as you see it, that was the script. And so unlike a normal film where you're still playing with the material and moving it around, that was the script. It was very open and close. Mm. And then the shot selection just took an enormous amount of time. Mm. And so a lot of the shots you see, there'd be about three shots that could easily replace any of those shots. And so it was quite a bit of debate happened in the edit suite about what the shots were. But that's the film I wanted out.
So that part taken out of the script, that was taken out because it was just not needed, or was it too inflammatory? Or
no, what it did was, and speaking from the North Korean perspective, is it said, but all is not completely lost in the West. There are those fighting for the cause, and it named your Noam Chomsky's and your Michael Moore's and such people for standing up and doing the good fight and da da da. And as he pointed out, no, you've just bashed the shit out of the West. It's very absolute and black and white. That's what they just wouldn't do that. It's like inflating a tire and then letting it down a little bit. You're completely breaking tension at the complete wrong part of the film. And he's dead right. I was being a little bit of a fanboy and giving a nod to people. Well, what a crock of shit. And he called me on it. Yeah. So you're not missing anything.
You know, because the film came out a couple of years ago, right? So 2012,
July 2012, yeah.
And we're 2016, so we're a couple of years behind. And what I mean by that is you find things on different websites.
Yeah, yeah.
And you come across, so it's certainly in the front of our mind. Is it still in your mind? Is that, and are we asking you to time travel back to that Slavka?
No, it's fine. It's an unusual film in the sense that traditionally, like the film I'm working on now, I have a distributor attached already. We'll put it in at X Festival. Companies will buy it for certain territory, and it'll have a pattern and a life that's very predictable, like most films. We could never tell anyone about that film. The whole point was that it was made and slipped out with this backstory on YouTube. We had no idea if a single person would ever see it. It showed in film festivals, you know, Edver and things like that. But it also cannot be distributed because the cat's out of the bag and it's on YouTube. Who's going to buy it? Well, Poland showed it just recently on a TV station.
I saw a promo, I think.
And that which is unusual, but good on them. But I have a sales agent for it, and most every broadcaster in the world wants to show it, but genuinely fear a backlash for showing it. But strangely, one of my big hopes, well, it's not strange, but one of my big hopes was that universities would pick it up and show it and teach it in various departments, you know, media studies, film, sociology, and so on. And that's happened. And so it keeps finding this audience. And I don't think it matters that it's 2016, because I know it sounds a bit wanky, but it actually is timeless. In actual fact, I think more relevant today than it ever has been.
And there's been a few things people have heard talking like this, that the films made, say, 10 years ago are now really current today.
Yeah, that's right.
It's happening.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I don't know what I mean by it's happening, but there's this idea, maybe some more control taken away, maybe some more dumbing down happening.
We know what you mean. When you say that, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's understood. So it doesn't need to be defined in clear or precise terms. I think there is an understanding that when you say it's happening, yeah, I mean, people have their own word for it, but certainly there's a sense that we're in it right now, that the entire system of carnivorous capitalism exists. It's built on a vacuum, if you like. It's propped up by the Federal Reserve, which in itself is, I mean, bankrupt on every possible interpretation. I mean, it's the emperor's new clothes.
Well, like the banks died, and then they were brought back to life, and now these are just zombie banks.
I mean, it's completely and utterly preposterous that people haven't taken to the streets and smashed everything to pieces. I mean, because the information, the reality of what happened with that collapse and in the years following, the information is there that precisely what happened and the fact that there are zero repercussions. In fact, worse, not only are there no repercussions, the people who perpetrated it are rewarded in greater volumes than ever imaginable. And no one's doing anything. Well, you're getting, may I swear, is it okay?
Yeah.
You're getting f***ed beyond recognition, whilst those who've perpetrated the greatest crime in modern times are grossly rewarded, and no one does a damn thing. And because I think for the vast majority of people, it's just too much. It's just too much to bear. And what do you do? And who takes the lead, or who steps up? Any one particular form, or I don't know, Iceland has, you know, you're aware of what's happened in Iceland. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
And of course, beautiful example of how media is controlled in a small number of hands. People just aren't going to know about it because, of course, it's the most terrifying thing, that kind of action taken by the state somewhere.
Well, I remember when they were doing that Occupy in
Wall Street, is it?
Yeah, and it was in 2011, but they were doing it at Altea Square. Mm. And I was at film school at the time, and it was just across the road, and I could see them over in Altea Square. And I was that dude that was like, look at these f***ing hippies, you know? Like, what are they doing? And like 1 year later, worked it out. Got it, you know? It was that thing I was talking about, I was picking a side. Where it was like, I'm on this side, you know? And I wasn't even, wouldn't even go down there and talk to them and ask them why they're doing it, you know? Just had already made a decision in my head of what they were doing.
But where does that come from too? I mean, we unavoidably grow up with a certain bias in our household, whether we like it or not. Where you went to school, if you grew up in church or not. There are so many things that bear down on us. Are you supposed to know in absolute terms? Very few people emerge in their late teens, early 20s, going, well, now I can reasonably see what you're saying over there and over there. Let me just ponder that for a moment and I'll get back to you with a position. It's a very rare thing. It's something you have to exercise, right? So don't be too hard on yourself for saying you looked out and thought, what the fuck is that? I don't know. The fact that you're now turning around and can see yourself.
I think it's a part of growing position. Up as well.
Yeah, of course,
you know.
But some people never do. Some people become quite fixed at 18. That's my position.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. And cling to it because they attach their values to it.
Mm.
That's dangerous. And the only reason they'll change is when another position becomes mainstream and popular and it becomes untenable to hold on to their old position because they'll be left out.
Yeah. Well, hopefully things like podcasts, hopefully things like the internet will keep that in as a possibility, you know, that ideas can get out.
Mm.
I mean, it's I just hope it doesn't get all too controlled. Maybe it will, maybe it's inevitable. I'm not sure. But when you were saying why aren't we on the streets? And I have to think I'm the person. I'm the one my kids will look back at and say, "You dork. You didn't get out there and lead to say what you were even trying to get your voice out there, but you never were brave enough to stand on the streets with those people. Thanks, Dad." You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, you know, it can be intimidating too sometimes if you feel you don't know enough information about something or if you're smart. I mean, like, you guys are now in a position because you're quite specifically thinking or looking into things, where do you find yourselves catching yourselves thinking, well, this makes sense to me and this feels right to me, but then having doubts about the information and where you're getting it.
Mm.
You've got to cross-check yourself and then more doubt. You know, this is normal research in the process you should be taking. You can end up tripping up over yourself or doubting yourself too much. And sometimes extremism comes from unexpected places. I always tend to think of religious extremism But my best friend, who's a trauma doctor and sees, I mean, the absolute worst, most unimaginable, you know, horrific things. And he's an extremist, like a preacher ranting to a Baptist church when it comes to certain things like vaccinations, whatever, just absolute extremist on the far end. If you dare mention, you know, maybe just perhaps, you know, something that just goes hysterical.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, there's this idea of death too.
Because he's seen it.
Yeah.
In third world countries, what measles actually looks like.
Oh, so he's on the side of everyone needs to be vaccinated. That's his position.
More extreme than that. I can't use the expletives for even questioning it. Yeah. How dare you?
Yeah.
And it's so extreme. I try saying to him, nothing's so perfect. I completely understand. I would rather not have polio or measles. Thanks very much.
Don't think you're vaccinated for like...
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I wouldn't want polio. My grandfather had polio. I carried him around his whole life out of his chair. Awesome dude and stuff. Yeah, I'll take a jab. Thanks very much. But nothing can be wholly perfect. And if you're a scientist, the whole point is everything's always moving and evolving and changing by the nature of what you do. And it's why could you be so fixed on something when highly likely that game itself is going to change and evolve pretty quickly in the next few years? It doesn't make sense.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. Again, half of it's most likely you don't want to let people down too. You've studied really hard to...
Yeah, no, not well said. Yeah,
yeah.
No, exactly. And like I say, he's seen it, and he's so extreme because things we don't think of, measles, whatever and stuff, how nasty and vicious and horrible some of these diseases are, and you've seen them and people dying. So, yeah,
Yeah. Well, there's that idea of you, if you see a lot of death, if you're around death too, I won't say reading. I was looking into some stuff yesterday around this idea of death because it comes up a lot on the podcast, this idea of trauma. I mean, if you think about it logically, that gives people an edge. You know, if something close happens, you're able to force perspective. I mean, you had your kind of own story to the doctor telling you some stuff. I watched a bit of your TED talk.
Oh, that.
Where I was thinking in the moment when I was watching it, was that a changing point for you? Because were you forced perspective? Were you forced to look at life different, out of the bubble?
Are you talking about the brain tumor?
Yes.
I was 28, I think. I just turned 29. I just moved to Miami, and it just simply never occurred to me. Thanks very much. You simply don't think about death. Well, I mean, you know what it is, but you don't think you're going to die in your 20s. Well, I mean, some people might be different. But quite rightfully, you shouldn't expect to die. And so, yeah, no, being told you had a few months to live is, just profoundly and deeply wrong. Did it change my life? I don't know if I've ever said this before, but I mean, I was an adult. I mean, I was a father. I think it was the first time I was an adult in that moment. And what I mean by that was in waiting for a few weeks to get a follow-up CT scan, just to confirm whether I had, it was the type of tumor where it would be 4 months or 6 months that I had to live. I didn't tell anyone because I didn't want to upset anyone. Just that care to look out for everyone else. It just came naturally, and it was a lonely and strange time. And the most peculiar thing, you know, was you'd go to sleep. And in your dreams, it's beautiful, lovely, even if it's not a particularly nice dream. And you wake up, and within a few seconds, you have to relive this thing comes sweeping, that you're going to die. That was something that was completely unexpected. It was this really hideous thing. I don't say that that's life-changing, but certainly unexpected.
Well, it's normally the other way, right? You wake up and you're relieved that your dream was your dream.
Yeah, no, but this thing, you'd wake up and just this... But, you know, I mean, I'm so lucky. It just sits there well-behaved, minding its own business.
Didn't the doctor say to you as well, it's your lucky day? Didn't you say that in your TED talk?
Oh, no, I mean, when that woman crashed into me and ripped the car, and, I mean, all the attending officers and stuff had stopped me, and, like, first of all, you just shouldn't be here. Today's your lucky day, you know. And, and when I had that second scan, you know, everyone's peering through the glass, you know, from the room where they're watching it and stuff, and they're like, yeah, it's your lucky day. You might have another 5 years. You know?
Yeah, wow.
And being told you have 5 years is pretty magical until the 5 years comes around.
Yeah.
And you've got to have your follow-up scan. It happens over again and over again. But I don't know, I've got to be honest with you. Did it change my life? I must say, in a strange way, no. And I think for some people, they have an epiphany when they... I've had a lot of near-death experiences and bad accidents. And I wish I could say there was some profound moment that stopped me being, you know, such a hardcore... up, which I was being at the time, you know, like a voracious drug addict, and yeah, I was really screwing up. And you should think that would stop you in your tracks. No, it kind of gave me permission. Well, not permission, but it was sort of like, sweet, you're off the hook. You're off. Wow, what a break. I mean, anything's a bonus from here on in, right? So just live.
Which drugs?
More a case of which ones weren't they that I yeah. Misappropriated. Yeah, no, I was, it was all on. Strangely, I'd never done anything up to the age of 28 and got to Miami.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Don't even drink, you know. I might have a beer once a week, but yeah, nothing. That's interesting, I suppose. But, but what it did do is I think, and then I think two years later, I had a cardiac arrest and stopped breathing from it. I was dead for a minute. And that has had a lasting effect on me, that particular thing, because it was such a wonderful experience, and it got me really, really fascinated with death and this thing of being on the edge of life, and I've studied it a lot. So... It's had an effect on me collectively, those things. But as for that moment of, oh, wow, you know. Yeah. And I had a follow-up, my five-yearly scan on my brain to see how it was going. And I had some symptoms. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is it, you know. And it's fine, you know. Just don't care. I shouldn't say. I'm not saying I don't care. Respect your brain tumor. You know what I'm saying. But there's so much learned peace now and acceptance. And I turned 45 last Saturday. Now I'm winning. You know, if it stops now.
Well, it's this amazing thing.
Sorry for the rant.
No, it's not a rant. It's
tell me to shut
up. It's making. Ironically, it makes sense to me, because I think what people think is, you have a close call and something you, what we do is we try and project ourselves into your shoes, you know, and we think, what would we do? Well, maybe that would be a huge change. But if you're actually dealing with something yourself, there's no one else there. It's just you. So it's probably a little bit, I use easier very gently, because you've got two options, just deal with it or not. And so it's not like a group discussion, like, you know, if me and Crawford talk about, imagine if we were in Slavko's position, what would you do? You know, and then you can start building things up, and I get that.
Look, and the irony is, I was asymptomatic. If it wasn't for that car crash and being sent for MRIs, They wouldn't know, and it may be that I get to the end of my days and need never have known. And yet, having been put in that position, you know, it's an invaluable insight into yourself and life. It could be, I mean, highly unlikely, it could be you have growths or tumours inside you right now that you just don't know of. Not uncommon. My girlfriend, I've just been nursing her back to health because she had a large apricot-sized lump removed surgically that she got onto very quickly, you know. No known cause, just one of those things. You know, so that seems a bit dark. I don't mean to be like that. I just mean you could be going around.
Well, I don't think it's dark at all. I think it's just how
it's reality.
How we should talk. Yeah, I think it's excellent that we ponder these things.
Yeah, and but don't ponder them too much. Try and enjoy yourself.
It's a balance,
unencumbered by dark thoughts of death, or you'll go nuts. But yeah, and how you deal with it should the time come, who knows? You know, we all like to think we deal with these things with dignity and courage. You know, it's like being in an earthquake, you know, when that stuff rips through or some... No one knows.
But there's also studies out there with huge dramatic events, huge moments, that it actually brings out the best sides of people, the happiness, you know. Yeah. And I think them... So obviously what that says to me, not obviously, I think what it says to me is that there's must be a part of our brain that's there for us, that's helping in those moments, that we probably try and numb. That ties back to propaganda, and that numbing is helpful because it stops me going to the street in fear. It stops me pondering too hard my own mortality. And then I guess you can add, if that's not enough for you, if the current state of numb's not enough, let's add a little bit on with some booze. If that's not enough, let's do a little bit more, get us through that next day. And if you're lucky enough to come out the other side,
maybe do it all again.
Yeah, it happened in Christchurch following those quakes. You know, people, it's a very interesting study of, you know, trauma. Some people can just completely fall apart, you know, and it's not anyone's fault. And others, the cracks appear in various ways down the track. Other people sail through. Others, you know, a lot do the obvious thing. The consumption of alcohol goes through the roof. Yeah, you know, I suspect most people don't know how they'll react to certain things until thrown in a situation. But you'll know if you're involved, if you ever see a car accident or someone collapse on the street and stuff, you know who you are by how you respond to those things. Either it's pulling out a phone and making a phone call really quickly, or running over to ask for help, or just holding the person's hand. Or so, you know, if you get those opportunities, you should do them. I know this might sound a bit weird, because when shit hits, you know, it's a good lesson in just being active and doing something.
Isn't it weird that we say it might sound weird? Because we, as a society today, we have to kind of put that in front, just so people know, hey, you know, I'm into this current life. I know what to do.
Well, and you're self-aware of how things might sound. Yeah.
What was dying like? Did you have a near-death, like in one of those near-death experiences that I heard about?
I think, you know, it's something I never talk about because it's iffy ground, isn't it? I mean...
Well, I'll just say you're always not the first person to talk about that. Other guests have died.
The reason that kicked me, not kicked, but really got me intrigued in thinking about a death... in a front-on way is because it was the second time, and I found that I discovered there was a phrase called the edge of life. And having been on the edge of life is where you're either diagnosed with something and you're going to die, or you're in a situation where you think you're going to die, or you have died. And so it was two experiences for me, but both very different things, you know. But the having died, and I was lucky, one of my best friends there is an aetherist who specializes in resuscitation. That's his thing, and it's just pure luck.
That's lucky, yeah.
Yeah, and if not for that, yeah. So he kept working on me for some time, and yeah, I'm not a religious person. Well, it's kind of obvious from propaganda, but you know, I was spiritually wide open, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, I think I didn't know how to describe it at the time, but now, having studied quantum physics a lot and also having studied Buddhism a fair bit, I think the two sit very neatly together, in the sense that in an instant, that something far shorter than an instant or a microsecond or anything I can possibly imagine, you, it's like, do you ever meditate? No, yeah. And sometimes when you're meditating, you get to a point where actually your body will come apart, and actually in particle form, you just literally dissipate and become something else. It's like that, only automatic, and there's this knowing automatically that you're everything. But the opposite of ego, I just mean you're absolutely nothing, but a complete understanding. Oh, you understand absolutely everything. I mean, you have access to everything. You are everything. And that's no news to anyone who's studied Buddhism at all. It's just that I hadn't. And so I experienced that in real form. And but it's still indescribable to me, the perfection and beauty of it. You're just unencumbered by all of this shit.
Gosh, that sounds ego, great.
Care, where it's utter perfection. Take your best meditation, times it by a few billion. Indescribable. And perfect. And also, in scientific terms, makes complete and utter sense, too. Well, maybe it's not some scientists, but I think if you study quantum theory, all of a sudden that clicks, too, you know, tied in with Buddhism. And this is just my opinion. Other people, and of course I studied it, of course, after that, other people's experiences, there are shared facets in those stories, but all of them reasonably different.
Well, and what I hope too is, because people don't talk about this stuff very often, that it might trigger in someone else's brain that maybe has experienced something what you have, but hasn't really followed it up with anything, so they're left thinking, okay, what am I feeling, what am I thinking? And if that can at least give some, just a little rest, you know, like, oh good, I'm not the only one who pretends nothing else is going on.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, and I can only speak for my experience. I don't know. I would never dare to say that's how it is. Yeah. Maybe it was my experience connected to, you know, scientists like to explain it as, oh, your synapses were firing as your brain shut down, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing mystical about it. Yeah, so I would never venture to say this is how it is. But if that is how it is, please take comfort in knowing you have nothing to fear.
See, perfect.
You know?
Yeah.
Only the way you go out is what I worry about.
Well,
I don't want to go out in some horrible state. That's why I'm a big fan of euthanasia. For me.
Yep.
You know, I understand there's problems with it. That's a whole other discussion, of course.
Have you seen that documentary? Is it something about Oregon? Have you seen that one?
Oh, I think I've heard something.
Yeah, that one's really good.
Yeah.
They just follow this woman around. She's got cancer. And they follow her till the day she goes out.
Yeah.
And they don't have the camera in the room, but they have microphones in the room. They have a camera outside. It's really powerful.
That would be powerful. Yeah, yeah.
It's really powerful.
And so you can hear the ventilator being shut down, or you can hear her stop breathing, or you can...
It's more like the funeral, like, her last day with the family, and they're all singing and watching home videos and just having that last day together before she goes. And they it's they take a bunch of pills, I think.
There's a special kit.
Yeah. I think they take a bunch of pills, and it just shuts you down. Yeah.
Nice.
It's a really powerful movie.
Well, you know, I don't want to tie it too much into anything, but, you know, like we were saying, well, like I was saying, that friend of mine in this board of trustees saying kids can't climb trees, it's that same idea, I think, with euthanasia. It's like everyone's just, let's just make a rule, but let's not consider different things. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying humans are like animals, but if it's your pet, it's seen as you're a hero, you know, if you're putting them down, if it's really terrible. And I mean, I'm not saying put down's probably a word that has loaded me, but you know what I mean. So, yeah. And I'm the first to admit I'm a dork, so I'm just expressing as I go with my limited brain. Think,
you know, what would be a good idea, I just off the top of my head, but, you know, if along your journey, like say now, there was a paper, like a will, and you're like, of complete sound mind and body, age 25, I agree to the following, blah, blah, blah. So that should the time come and someone says, oh, you know, he really wanted to be retired, there will be a paper trail repeatedly that those were your politics and beliefs. I really strongly felt that I didn't want to suffer, that I wanted to go out on my own terms, and there'll be a record of it. I think would help a lot.
Yeah, I think the bill in the Oregon one is called Death with Dignity. Which is a nice way of putting it.
Creepy thought in my mind. What if you, like, had a stroke and couldn't talk and changed your mind?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are all these things that can go wrong. And it's the degree of suffering and interpretation of, you know, you'd actually have to have a good sit down with your partner or whoever it was you're close to and go, okay, listen, I'm fine with slight paralysis down one half if I can still enjoy my movies and, you know, text my friends. But, you know, and what's brain impairment for one person to another person, you know, if you're still smiling and drooling and able to watch TV and that's your gig.
There's definitely ways that it can be abused as well. There's some people out there that would, you know, convince sort of dementia suffering elderly people so they inherit money and all that stuff.
And but if you can imagine in rest homes too, and that would, of course, your costs, your money keeps coming in if you keep them alive. But what if at a certain point that money or funds run out? We think this person needs retiring and there's no family or shit. People are extremely vulnerable, yeah.
It's great that we can already have those. See, we're already brainstorming back and forth, you know, on those. And I think that's important because I just think that doesn't happen in a group, in a big group. You know?
Our family and friends, we have an agreement. It's called the pillow agreement. And there are degrees of things where everyone's like, no, that's me, I'm out. If I can't do the following things, you'll do the pillow. And the nice thing is in New Zealand, you can hold the pillow over someone's face just to see them. I do the whole pills thing, and even they want out. But out of love, I'm going to put that pillow on you just to make sure it's done. I only do 18 months. And in that time, free postgraduate degree where I'd get around to doing my master's. I never did with it, so I'd make it work for me. Do you know what I mean? And my mum, she's like, now I'll do my pillow for you. It's a measure of love in our family. I'll give you the pillow. Sometimes we say that at the end of the night. Pillow.
Well, there's like activist groups that go do it and risk jail time.
Oh my God, I'm in a lot of trouble if this comes out. And some, Your Honour, I give you podcast from 2016.
Yeah. My Kiwi Life episode 17. Will Fleming and Crawford Hannah talking evidence. Be a new Netflix series, but Making a Murderer.
I've had conversations with people that that you talked about with the guy with the vaccinations that is just like total accusation, you know, like, what are you, a murderer union? And like, just, it's just total emotion. You can't have a conversation like we're having now about it. And it just gets all jumbled.
No, I was just on the way here. There was some yelling and screaming. Mm. And the car, so I just got out of the car. I'm like, see ya. We love each other very much. We've been friends for 40 years. But anyway.
Slavko, you're talking about meditation. And that's something that excites me but scares me too. I don't come from that background. I come from a background where my mother was a churchgoer, but not really. She still smoked and drank and partied, so it was more of a hangover from her mother where they had to go. And I get that.
Religion is hangover.
That's
a good line.
It was, yeah, Will Fleming.
Right. Nice.
Wait. No, sorry, you've said it. It's out in the world now.
Religious hangover. Use that. Use that in a line somewhere if you write something. That's good.
I'll say that at your funeral, Will.
Yeah. Oh, with my gravestone made out of a pillow. So, what was I saying? Something about my mum and that they, I don't know, just gone.
Religious hangover. No, a little bit religious.
I was trying to get into
meditation.
So meditation was never part of, like, my parents never said, look, just be mindful. Let's have a moment where we concentrate on our breathing. You know, something like that. So I'm stuck in a Tony Robbins zone with it, you know, where I think it's awesome. I'm hearing people talking about it. But for me, it's like I still hear Tony saying, hey, Will, thanks for letting me into your life. Let's do some breathing, you know, and so I'm stuck. But what I want to ask you is, like, what's your way into that? What's your technique? What are some things that I can practice, folks at home, can gently get into that?
I don't know that I'm...
I want to have some mind body breaking up experience. How do I do that?
Well, there are quicker ways with certain medicines. Ketamine, I would suggest. Well, I don't suggest. Special on the K. Pillow series, February 2006. I do not, Your Honor. There are many different ways into it. Start small, zero resistance. I had a girlfriend once, and it's a curse because, bless her, she would say, just breathe in through one nostril and count to five, you know, really calmly, and then out, and then block the other nostril out and do the counting in and out, really, really gentle. She goes, or just think in terms of when you breathe through your nose, feeling it here. Keep feeling the breath just here, coming in and out, whatever. And just think of that. Because even thinking, I know, it's nothing, whatever. And I can't use that method now because as soon as I start doing that, she's there in my head talking to me about that thing. It's a curse. I don't know if you're into smell. It's a good cue for you. Chanting. Some people swear by chanting. There are many different ways.
I was going to try the float tank in a couple of weeks. This will be my first attempt at...
Always wanted to do that.
Trying to find something else.
Don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Just, your mind will wander always.
Yeah.
Just, and don't beat yourself up on that. Just be conscious of just going.
All right.
It's a part of meditation as well for your mind to come down to quiet thoughts. And then to have a thought, it comes back. It just means you're healing.
Just
it feels, that's what I was told.
Like weight loss for me, you know, like you start off with good intentions and then you have a cheat day.
But don't beat yourself up on
that. Okay. Yeah. A lot of people say that to me, don't beat yourself up. And I'm like, well, okay.
Because you take a long, long view. Rather than I've got to go on a diet, you're doomed. You're doomed. Because you're only seeing it as a closed form of punishment, a short form punishment, which when you feel released from, you'll be like, oh, thank God, go and have an ice cream. Whereas if you think, like, just long term, I want to be in good shape. I have these battles myself. Sometimes you'll feel like an ice cream. Do it. Just don't do what I do. I'm being a hypocrite here. I'll go to that tub of ice cream. That shit's gone. The whole thing. Even though I'm consciously saying to myself, not this time. This time you're going to. And then I'm looking at that empty tub. Yeah. I've got an ice cream problem.
Yeah, so I smashed the ice cream last night.
Yeah. What flavor?
It was this coconut ice cream. Ooh. I justified it to myself. I was like, it's coconut.
See, yeah. If you brought some here, they'd just be like,
yeah. I'd like the show notes for this episode. Keywords, it'll be all over the place.
So coconut ice cream. What was the religious one? Religious hangover.
Yeah. I love everything, right? Just, I'm too dumb to make a big call.
Stop saying that.
Okay. I'll stop saying that. I wouldn't mind trying to work out what you thought the plan was going forward. And I say that because, you know, I'm 35 and I only just realized now I've got to work out what the rest of my life means.
Mm-hmm.
I got the kids, the wife, the job.
Is that what you wanted? Or is that what was expected of you and you fulfilled?
It was maybe a bit of both.
Yep.
I'm really happy. But I do get a little bit scared now that I open myself up to this, these type of chats with different perspectives.
Good on you.
My perspective was very locked in. I was probably the extremist, and all I want is my family, my job, and this. And I wasn't prepared to open
comfortable
up
place anything, on the couch.
Comfortable place, which I would be happy to roll with. But you have two or three conversations with people, you see things. I'm forced perspective now, and I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to pick something to work at going forward, I better make sure that it's good for me, or I'm going to regret.
What inspires you? What do you enjoy?
Well, I really enjoy this. Quite often people ask me, what do I like?
The aspect of having a conversation of, you know, like I enjoy the process of interviewing because I'm naturally a researcher and I like...
No, it's not the research part because I'm not a good reader. I'm not a good writer. I'm okay at talking. So for me, this gives this is like a substitute for those things. I don't have to do the hard work because we
can talk about it. Do you like the idea of sharing stories? Or revealing information?
No, not revealing. I like the idea of we all leave here thinking, it makes a bit more sense now.
Well, I think it's that it's like a safe place to have conversations like this. Like I'm the type of dude that's like at work and I'm trying to like elevate sort of like small talk to sort of medium talk, and then I'm trying to sort of get it up there, and people just want to talk about the weather, and it's hard to get people talking about stuff that actually matters.
Not that it matters, but I'm 45, you're 35, we're talking about age.
26.
Oh, how lovely. And so you studied film at university.
Yeah. It was practical filmmaking though.
How was it?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. But it was practical filmmaking more than theoretical. So it was like how to use a camera, how to edit, that type of thing.
All the things I can't do.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't get into film school.
Why?
Because I couldn't paint. Because back in the day, you understand, we were at school, the only place you could study film in New Zealand was at fine art school, the film department in fine art school. And the only way you could get into fine art school was based on your paintings in the seventh form. I can't paint. I would love to paint. Life would be a lot easier if the things in my head, rather than have to spend years working on a film, I just get a paintbrush and be like, that's what I was thinking there.
So,
I would love that.
So what did you do?
That's one of my dreams, by the way. Really? It's my dream. I want to get myself in a position where I have enough money, decades away, where I could just wake up and be like, I have to do today. I had this thing in my head, and I got me some paintbrushes and a canvas. That's me. I would be as happy as can be. Happy as can be.
But you write.
I can write. I've learned to write. Yeah.
And you just taught that on your own? You just started writing?
Yeah. I could always write as a kid. Writing was the most natural thing to me. I can write, see things visually, tell stories.
That's art, man.
Wanted to do film. And so... Yeah. Just decided that's what I wanted to do, and I just kept knocking at that door until finally at a network they were like, oh, for fuck's sake, shut up, and gave me a shot with a doco, and that's a bit more complicated than that, but anyway.
And what was that?
It was a film called The Nip Tuck Trip, which was their title, TV3. It's back in the days when you did docos for networks here. It was 2010 or 11. And it was about Kiwis going on cosmetic surgery holidays because per capita, we're up there at the top of the world with America. Yeah. And that was the interesting thing. Because, of course, we think of ourselves as Kiwis as being like, psh, don't give a shit, put my jandals on, scuff down the street, you know, what do we care? So, we care a lot. And so that to me was really, really intriguing, what's going on there and why. And so I followed a group of Kiwis as they travelled to Kuala Lumpur on a cosmetic surgery holiday. Went very well.
Wow.
Still good film, good movie film.
And that's just lost to the network, it's not on internet or... Anything?
That's
I'd watch that.
You'd watch that?
Yeah.
I'll send it to you. Remind me after we'll do email addresses.
Cool.
And it's let's keep in touch. Yeah. And I'll send you a wee Vimeo link I've got somewhere.
Yeah,
it's a good wee film.
So the film that interests you, that storytelling.
I'm very hard on myself, but that actually, it was good. One of those sweet things when you're filming and you're in that zone,
mm-hmm.
and there's no getting out of it. It's a one shot thing, you know, like when you're there and that first scalpel's going to go in, and you're completely present, and you have to be meditative, you're in a moment and there can be nothing else. You have to be completely present at that time in order to be able to move, judge, talk, ask, do anything, and react only to completely what's happening in that microsecond. It's quite thrilling.
Do you think there's don't do this, William.
Do it.
I'm just wondering if there's any tie over with that with me here. Is that what I'm trying to get? Am I trying to find my flow in that, in this room where
I think am I just trying to get on a cosmetic surgery list for a good price, and can you recommend a good doctor?
I've heard
I actually can. I can hook you up with someone and get a good discount too.
Sweet. Oh,
Thailand, I've heard, is good for
Argentina
surgery.
For some things. Yeah. Argentina as well. But there are certain places and certain doctors and certain hospitals. You gotta be careful. When the time comes and you want to get some implants.
I know a lot of girls, they got implants from Thailand.
You know, yeah? Yeah. How did it work out?
She seems happy.
Yeah, okay.
Facebook, you know. Seems happy on Facebook.
she's presented a form of happiness.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're doing.
Well,
it scares me, man, because I'm
If we're going to talk about propaganda, there's this term I read about a few years ago. We're talking about social media. We now have the democratization of propaganda. We're all doing it. We're all master propagandists. We're all manipulating our story and our version of the world and presenting it in a way exactly as we want it to be seen in order to get approval. And when we say, oh, tonight I'm going to the XYZ or I did whatever, are we not key influencers in a group? Are we not looking to persuade? And have we... You guys are now of a generation, I don't say with any form of accusation because you've got no choice. You've simply grown up inextricably linked to social media. And I don't mean propagandists in a negative way, because not all propaganda is negative. A propaganda campaign in Uganda teaching people out in a village somewhere that there's a thing called HIV that can be prevented by using condoms is a good thing. But yeah, no, we're all doing it. Mm. It's completely normalized. And in a way, is that terrifying? Because if it's normalized and you don't see it, and all the best propaganda is that which you don't recognize or see, and if you effectively do it yourself and you're in that trade, everyone's their own PR manager, surely the construct becomes invisible. And yet saying that, you will have noticed in the last year, the actual phrase propaganda has become prominent in all media. The actual word is used, you notice, a lot.
Yeah. I like
it. Well, I've noticed anyway.
I like it in the movie where you say propaganda is just another word for PR. Or what is it?
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the same thing. But that just makes sense to me.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is.
But I never made that connection in my head before.
Well, yeah, no, there you go.
Yeah. And when it came up, I'm just like, makes sense.
Well, that's also the first time I've heard that it can be used for good. I just assumed propaganda was negative.
Yeah, yeah. No,
it's
really
a dirty word.
Predominantly, yes, it is used for, you know, to persuade people to come around to your corporation states or personal belief system or things you want. But sometimes, you know, like in Christchurch with the quakes, there was this thing, what was it? There's this thing called Are You Alright? I think it's called. And it's a PR campaign to check up on people's mental health and to get people observing other people and looking out for them and trying to keep people healthy, because it's exactly this many years after a natural disaster that people actually start to really suicide and goes through the roof and people really start to crack. Positive.
Yeah.
Bit creepy.
I just had another, well, creepy is a good segue. I just realized I was part of a propaganda machine. I used to make promos for Campbell Live. and we would do a lot of promos to try and get people to watch Christchurch. So I'm stuck in my mind now.
Sure.
Were we positive propaganda? Because I know I was trying. There was one promo I made. That's
good.
Okay, good, good.
Well, no, I'd be sorry, but just to cut you off, but I'm just saying, for we all knew that the rest of the country at a certain point are like, oh, stop, leave us alone, you know, and fair enough, for goodness sakes. But the fact that there was someone externally holding power to account, keeping people's attention on things in small details, was a godsend. That one thing, bless him, because without that, there was a feeling of being completely disconnected and cut off. It never ends. I mean, 5 years down the track, we still refuse to sign off with EQC. And keep fighting because, you know, we still can't use an upstairs shower or have a bath without the roof collapsing in because they want to tell us that the pipes and stuff were broken before the earthquake. They're also telling us that the giant crack running underneath the house was there before the earthquake. When they replaced the ceiling, I had to point out to them, you know, I was like, watch this, and it flick the lights on. I'm like, you notice anything interesting? And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, there's no lights coming on because you haven't left 8 holes for the f-ing lights that were there. It's just f- off. Come back when you learn how to build it. You know, and everyone's having these experiences. It's just so insane, the whole thing. And they came around and got my mum. They had the signature thing covered over. It was a trick they all had. Everyone knows about it. I'll just sign here for the latest thing. Pavement. She signed off. Whatever. Yeah, they had covered the fact that it was the whole sign off. Now you have to go keep fighting and paying money. You don't have to. Do you know what I mean? It's just never ending. And unless it was for people going, no, look, this shit's happening. And if it happens to you wherever you are, so I'm ranting. But what I'm saying is whatever you were doing was an enormous help. Okay. Yeah. In my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. So. Wow. I mean, that's the thing is that we try to put ourselves in other people's shoes, but it's never like it is, you know. What was your... Were you in Christchurch at the time?
For both of them. Yeah.
Is it like... Well,
5 of them.
Is it stuck in your head? You know? Like, is it...
Again, one of those things, you know, I don't think about it anymore. It's only moments like this when it comes up, but sometimes... Sometimes you remember someone will say something and you always have a laugh about it, you know. That first one, the September one, was terrifying. Terrifying. But, you know, you think you're going to die.
Yeah.
Because, like being in here right now and the violence, I mean, your whole body just, I mean, just completely, not allowed, you're just nothing but a piece of paper. It's impossible. And yet the following one was just so much... bigger. And I was working in the central city and I ran across and looked out on the street because I worked where all the heritage buildings were, and you're like, oh shit, you know. I ran out and the first person I got to was a lady with no legs, and you're trying to do shit, and you know when the aftershocks come, all the rest going to come down, and you've got to calculate, do I keep helping this person or am I going to, just all on crazy stuff. And yet everyone's got those stories, you know. And but, you know, on a positive note, you know, I don't read, only for research, you know, and so it was nice because at the end of the day, there's no electricity for weeks and stuff. You put on a candlelight and read a book. I got back into reading, which is nice.
Yeah.
So you'd read, then well, after shock, I'd rip through and knock the candle. You got to make sure there's no fire, put a new candle on, just get back to reading.
Another bit of forced perspective.
It's a very weird, peculiar thing. You find, well, I don't know, I find the, I don't know if it's romanticizing the worst things.
Maybe we
try and find the humor in things.
No, I think that's good.
I think it's maybe part of it, that part of the brain, you know, we're talking about. It's interesting too, those both perspectives, because I remember my involvement was before Campbell Live. I was working at TVNZ as a graphic designer, and
oh, really?
My job that's was really to for the news to someone would tell me, okay, it's 100 and something dead now. And I would change out the 4 and a 5 to the 4 or 6.
It's really interesting and gig,
then,
man.
And then I would save that as a, you know, PSD or whatever, send it off. And then, well, we need that updated now. And I was so removed, it was just the numbers for me. Until it got to like 300 or something, and I was like, these are people dead, right? And everyone was like, yeah. So I think I went home, you know, just a bit slower that night.
So you're a graphic designer?
Yes, I trained as a graphic designer, but I would class myself as not very good at it. I like to work really quick, which I don't have the... Apart from podcasting, I don't take a lot of detail with things. I just push through it. I'm happy if it doesn't look that great as long as it's done. Podcasting's the only thing which I'll cut quite, you know, on yeah. point. So I'm a lazy designer, but I'm a clever... collaborator.
He's an editor as well, and we're both editors. Yeah.
So I can do quite a few things. I have one of those.
He's types. Good.
I can
multi-skilled.
I've seen your stuff, Will.
Thanks, Cliff.
I admire your ability to edit. You don't even think of it. You're like, psh.
Yeah, but yeah, maybe you've just seen the film editing. I mean, normal editing is it's just you know timeline. Two clips, put them together. That's roughly it. There's a few tips and tricks. Yep. Okay.
I'm paying for. You know how your brain just doesn't work for some things.
Yes.
And I just know it's lazy. Like as a filmmaker, I'm not technically very savvy. Like I listen to people talk and these numbers. Get out the air fiesta with the blah blah blah. Oh, yeah, I hooked up the da da da. I'm just sitting there going.
I'm like that with graphic design. I just don't get it. I don't want to sit in there with After Effects and
around. And with so, it. Why spend your time trying to learn something when you know there are people there who are experts at it and really good at? And when the time comes,
there we go.
And you come on board and do that, and I'll stick with. Trying to get better and better at what I can do.
Well, that's the realization I've had, is that I won't be the best at these things. But if these conversations are about just providing a gentle platform where people can talk, I can get good at that.
You're good at it right now.
See,
I'm as relaxed as sitting here.
Boom! I might have put something in your drink, but that's.
I'm really enjoying it. And if that's the kind of hospitality you're going to bring to these occasions, hey.
Bring out the pillow.
Pillow talks.
It's a new podcast. It would be good, us three.
The spiked pillow talks.
Okay. Your new film, are you allowed to go into it, or is that hush hush at the mo?
Oh, good question.
Coming off the back of you saying you're really relaxed.
You know, vigilance. For the longest time, like I've been working on it since for over 2 years now, and it's been very hush-hush because when you learn in this business, and never tell anyone anything because some things are very easily stolen. And everyone has more money than New Zealanders with film. If someone finds out in the States, this thing would have just... That snap it out in 6 months.
That really happens. I've heard people say it.
I can tell you 6 occasions for me just in that where I've had idea because what I didn't know when I was starting out because the thing I do well is I just get good ideas and I'll say that with confidence. I'm usually my hardest critic. That's the thing I can do. And I can't even take any credit for it. I'll be driving along, zap, and it comes. And that's it. And I'm like always carrying my notepad, and that's it. And so I'd go into the networks and be like, oh, and they're like, I don't know who you are. I've got this idea, blah, blah, blah. 6 months later, you'd see it on 60 Minutes as a piece, the exact thing you'd just done over and over and over again. And in actual fact, how I got my first documentary was it got to the point I wrote to MediaWorks and to the press because I thought I'm never going to break through, but at least I can make a complaint about all my ideas keep being stolen. And they actually wrote an apology letter to me, you know. And
they should owe you more than that.
Oh, if it was America, I could have sued
financial
for it,
compensation. Like you wouldn't
believe. Yeah. Oh no, it was crazy. Like I should be careful what I say now, but yeah. But the worst ones were overseas because you know it was like. Nothing's happening here. So I'd send things to, you know, Channel 4, you know, BBC and stuff, whatever. And you'd write to these people and they'd write me like, oh my God, this is, wow, you know, it's unbelievable, you know. Take it to the table and I'm like, awesome. And they wouldn't get back to you and you'd wait for a while and be like, oh, just following up on the thing. Oh yeah, sure. Just still doing something. And after like 6 months, you'd be like, you know, just looking for a decision on the the idea of the, oh yeah, no, no, we already had that on the table. So have you got any other ideas you want to put through? And you're like, oh, that's fine. And you know, it's the same with the networks here. When someone first hears an idea, you know it's the first time they've heard it. I mean, their face drops, their eyes light up and stuff. Of course it's the first time they've heard it. Otherwise they'll say, well, actually, someone's got a similar thing. You know, someone has a similar thing after you've told them, they've gone and told their established producer friends.
Wow.
That sounds... So it's a bit...
And
that's how it was. And you learn the hard way, and then you just shut up shop and you're like, no one gets to know anything. And so this last one now, because we just started the edit yesterday... I deliver on the 31st of July. It would be extremely difficult for someone to copy it now, and yet...
That's lovely. Yeah. We could wait till it's out. Then we have another chat. That's cool.
It's a political film, just quite unexpected.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So, I mean, people
with chickens. And normally you'd be like, battery chicken. I've seen all this shit before. No, it's not about...
Right.
That's not about factory farms.
No. Enough said. I think people will follow you.
It's about very special chickens.
That's a tease, man.
And I know what I'm doing. And they're very special owners who do very special things.
Okay.
Okay.
I guess.
I'm not in pornography.
Is it KFC?
KFC makes an appearance.
Okay.
But only by chance, because one of these chicken people is eating it at this event.
Wow.
Yeah.
Will you be?
I'm sorry to be mysterious.
No, but will you have?
I'll come back.
Yeah,
and do definitely. Spiked definitely. Pillow podcast upon its release.
It's awesome. And then that'd
be my podcast debut.
Yes,
upon release,
we can. I'll write like a promo for it, like a Christchurch earthquake tied in with chickens.
A meditation, post-quake meditation.
Yeah.
Are you trying to hit
Mr. Brain Tumor himself, Slavko Mardanov? And we'll clap.
Sorry, Croy, you're trying to ask serious questions.
We'll clap for 5 minutes. Translation appears on website.
There you go. So instead of breathing in one nostril, you focus on the
up one side of the beak and out the other.
Is that coming out this year?
Well, we release it. When I say release, I mean the due date is 31st of July.
Are you trying to get in the film festival? The New Zealand Festival?
I will get into the New Zealand Film Festival.
This year?
No. What we go for is you've got to go for the A-list festivals first.
Okay.
So we'll know we have a place at IDFA in Amsterdam, but what we actually want is Sundance, which is January. That's why I'm finishing end of July, so in time to submit to Sundance. Because it's Sundance, Berlin... Rotterdam, Venice. You're trying to hit the South by Southwest. You're trying to hit the right festival for that film, and because that's where you'll do business, and that's where other distributors come in and tie in and set it up for theatrical runs and all those things get done.
So it's trying to get sold.
It's the business year after there, yeah. Okay. So we have the distributor already attached for Australia and New Zealand, which is Vendetta, and the Film Commission funded it. With some private funding, in which case it's public knowledge that it's called Pecking Order.
Wow!
So it's easier to get funding from the commission after you've made your film, after you've made propaganda.
The propaganda was for them the first time it had ever happened, that because you know for them they have on their website when a film makes an A-list festival they pay for you to go and stuff whatever. And they had no idea who I was, so I made propaganda. I entered it into IDFA as the first film festival event at Sundance and IDFA under the guise of Sabine. Like, nothing to do with us. It was this discovered film on a disc sent from Sabine, who'd translate, you know, the whole thing. We played it all the way to the hilt. And IDFA, you know, in Amsterdam, comes back and it's just like, dear Sabine, here's your, you know, acceptance into the film festival. Please, if you could, you know, contact us. And we're like, what the fuck? Oh my God. You know, this is like completely unbelievable. And so I wrote to the film commission going, oh, hi, how are you? Here's my acceptance letter. And they were unbelievably rude. It just doesn't work that way. You're in with them. And they funded you. And that's how you got where you got. You don't come in as a stranger saying you got into an A-list festival. doesn't work that way. And that would be rude. Who are you?
The film commission was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I qualify for, if you could just help me to, I had to write a letter of complaint to the CEO who gave everyone hell and was very apologetic but they just said it just hadn't happened. Mm. Someone had come out of nowhere, and I don't mean to sound like a dick, I just mean the cronyism in the film commission was chronic. Now it's different with Dave Gibson at the helm.
Really?
They've turned it around so that they're trying to be very open to everyone, and that's genuine. But for me, it wasn't until Michael Moore gave it Best Film,
that's actually, awesome.
And all of a sudden, yeah, they call you. How can we help?
Yeah. How did that feel, Michael Moore?
You know, I'm just going to sound like a dick. I mean, but put it like this: we, in making that film, you know, we were using, because I was pretty careful about the Fair Use Act, using footage from other films and stuff, whatever. And we actually said in the edit, you know, man, what if? I mean, we also believed we would get sued. I mean, I was convinced of it. I mean, 100% convinced I was going to be sued. But I just thought that'll be good marketing for me, being sued, because also, what are you going to sue me for? I don't own anything. It'll be great. Free marketing, I couldn't believe it. But I thought, oh my God, you know, these people will sue us for using their footage, maybe. I don't know. How will they feel? Just the idea that someone like that would even see your film. And then one day you get that call, you know, we've got your plane tickets, I want you to come to this film festival, or regards, Michael. And you're like, he's sword. You're kidding me, it's unbelievable. And then I had a problem where they were trying to stop me getting a visa into the States through the embassy, because I was on quite a few lists, government lists by then. I'd been brought into the counterterrorism unit and all those things, you know. And even the ambassador to the US consul here called me up one day. I was out for a run. It's one of the weirdest phone calls I ever had in my life. And because I'd called Adam Dudding at the Sunday Star Times on the story of how they were preventing me from getting in. And so he called them. And so only because of that, I get this phone call and I'm running. So weird. He's like, so I have your passport here. I'm like, does it, because I leave in like 2 days. Does it have a visa in it? Yes. I'm like, can you guarantee my safety into America? Pause. No, I cannot. I'm like, sir, you know, and just having this really weird, so weird, a very strange thing. And so I was really freaked out going to the States. But Michael Moore was wonderful. He's like, my team of lawyers are at your disposal. Tell me what you need. And yeah, he was amazing. He was great. It was absurd. This person, you know, you look up to, well, you might not, but I mean, for me, you know, it was. And when I arrive, and the next morning I get taken into this room in this huge theatre, whatever, and he turns up and I'm on this panel to discuss these political things with people who are Oscar winners, you know. And Michael just turns up and he goes, Slavko. He goes, hey, and he goes, come here, puts his arm around me. He goes, okay, so I'm going to come at you with this angle and we're going to do it. I'm like, yeah, sure thing. Like, oh, my God. And from that day, I'd just be like in a theater and my film's playing, whatever. I'm just standing at the back, and in the dark, there's this voice me going, how's the sound? How's the sound? I think it needs to go up. What do you think? I think, no, the sound's, I'm going to change the sound, whatever. And it's just him, you know, he's hovering around. It was just such a lovely, lovely guy. It was so nice. And so, how does it feel? I mean, what are you going to do? You know, it's that thing as humans and artists, what are you going to do? The head pat, you know, well done, you did, it feels good.
What's also
it's vindication, it's validation, that you can't pretend otherwise, you know. And it helps, the film commission calls you up and goes, so come in and talk.
Yeah.
Oh geez, is that all it took?
Yeah. What, me? Well, you also the good part of what we hold up in our Kiwi culture, which is, I'll get it done myself. You know,
it's very good. The thing that shocks us when we're at film festivals overseas and we talk to people are making docos, and these people don't have to worry about money.
Yeah.
When they're at that level, they have patrons. Because in America, you know, in Europe, there are people who are so rich, they get off, as much as they have, you know, millions and millions of dollars in stocks and shares, they get off sitting around a dinner table going, well, I'm backing this new artist, or I'm backing this new sculptor. I have a filmmaker. And they love it. It's a kick. What are you working on next? They said, What do you need? I'm working on some oil well fracking pipeline. I mean, I have friends, doco makers. They have patrons. They call up. I'm going to need $262,000 for post. Sure, no problem. And it's gobsmacking to us, you know, like, good on them.
Yeah.
It's nice. However, here, you know, like, you know yourselves, if you want to do something, well, you're doing it.
Mm. The challenging bit for me and Crawford is like, and maybe you can give us some advice on that, we're kind of comfortable with this idea that maybe if it doesn't initially find its audience, maybe it's a little bit too early, or we don't have the right way to get it out there. Maybe we do, or it just takes time. We're okay with that because we just get to express ourselves, talk. We leave here with the endorphins buzzing. Nice. You know? And it's a, like, if I'm brutally honest, it's an awesome way to network. Cool, now we know you. Who nice. Knows
and where I know the, you guys. I had yeah. no idea, you know. And, geez, my inner propagandist thinks, man, if I want to promo my next film or something, I'm going to come to you guys.
Boom. Dude, yeah. We're on it. We'll work for free. That's
just
the best.
A mutual back scratching.
Yeah, man. Well, that's the thing. Well,
it's all sounding quite dirty already, isn't it? Like, my God, what have we become?
Pillow talking, but a bit of scratching. It's another side of you.
Spiking your drinks. Good Lord.
But it's a good way to – I feel like it's – we're specifically going after people like yourself who aren't the – there's a sense even through online, and it's weird. We're like picking up your micro expressions online. We're trying to see if that's something that can go with this idea we've got on, you know, consciousness. What does it all mean? Can we get a different perspective from your side? The TED Talks help too, because it's weird, because I'm a bit tough on the TED Talks, because myself, I'm like, you shouldn't tell people what to say.
Yeah, TED's a bit of propaganda right there.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, you know, documentary is propaganda.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know?
But that's what was so cool about the way you framed it in your movie.
Completely own it.
Of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what's cool about it.
I even called it a propumentary as a genre. Oh, fuck yeah.
Was that
the exactly what it is. Here's the entire point. You know, propaganda wrapped in propaganda as propaganda.
Yeah. Was that there from the beginning when you started writing? I read somewhere that you started working on it eight years before it came out.
Yeah, 2003 I had the idea. And that came about of wanting to... Oh, because at that point, I had been arrested and pretty much thought I was, sure I was going to prison and only had a few months to live, because that 5 years was up and it's a pretty dark time. And I thought, what do I want to do? I thought, well, I want to make a film, and what matters to me? And I literally pulled out a bit of paper and started writing all these things that, I mean, seemed so basic. It was the first time in my life I'd actually written down, here's what matters to me, here's what interests me, here's what I have to say, all these things, here's what I want to do. It's the first time I ever wrote a list. And, you know, a 5-year list, a 10-year list, goals and things. And this theme kept emerging, resentment of being lied to and seeking out the truth from a little kid, my earliest memories, the same themes kept emerging. And so it came to discovering propaganda as a term, studied it. I thought that's what I would make a film about, propaganda, but it would just be too dry. I knew even then. So, and then flash, this idea popped into my head that it was intercepted from somewhere, Cuba, Iran, North Korea. Research those. North Korea puts its hand up because no one knows enough about it to refute you saying that it came from there. So it was a perfect out. And I studied absolutely everything there was to study so that you'd always be able to deflect criticism, but not too much, because people love it. You know, people get hostile. I could tell you some stuff. There was there was this guy who was clearly a plant. I don't know, CIA or I don't know, whatever it is. But we would go to sleep. And I mean, the attack personally and on the politics and whatever. It was just relentless over days and then over weeks.
Just online.
Yeah. And, you know, like on the channel where it was emerging and I was kind of losing my mind because I'd be like writing as Sabine, this character that we'd actually created and written with her back, so even knew who her parents were, everything about her. And I was her. So I'd be writing as her in character. And, you know, being told people want to do like nasty rape stuff, quite specific in their attacks on you. This other person, I've become this person, just relentless in their attack. It was very, very strange. But the thing was, I'd wake up and the person had still been going. So you realise it's not one person, but it's an active campaign. Where's it coming from? And I'm not making this up. Well, there's a record of it in there somewhere. But one day, this person, Mike, who's my co-producer and editor, his phone goes. His wife brings the phone into him. It's bath time with his kids and stuff, whatever. And it's this guy. Now, we had zero digital footprint, especially Mike had nothing to do with anything. He's completely invisible. I had an invisible digital footprint. I mean, people had tried. There's just no getting through. We'd blocked ourselves, tracked the works. Gets a phone call in his house from this guy. And, like, Mike's freaked. And so we carefully write something in the forum, you know, where the film was or something.
Was he an American dude?
Yeah. And we wrote something to the effect of, we're very careful about it, how this person, because it had become very familiar, people were attacking all over constantly, this stuff going back and forth through people, how this person had crossed the line and made a phone call at the personal house of one of my crew, and raised the questions, how did this person know how to do this, this is not normal, blah, blah, blah. I think 24, 48 hours later, you know, Anonymous came up and said they had located the exact address of that person and the issue had been taken care of. We do not forget. We do not, you know, this thing, whatever.
We are legion.
Yeah. Gone. Person gone. I kid you not. And it's at moments like that where you're just going...
Yeah, I imagine that film's big with Anonymous.
Yeah, you know, but things like that were happening all over the place, like all the time. And it seems crazy now looking back on it because it all becomes very normal. You're taking it in your stride because it's all happening. But that was...
Well, even how you were getting called from South Korea, right? Are you a spy?
Oh, no, the South Korean government called... Yeah, that was a...
And you said... Moment.
Isn't it banned?
Like, they didn't care if I tell the truth or not. They had made up their... story
there. Oh, you know, the great irony, because I always thought, because we did risk assessments for the film, because it's my responsibility not to get anyone in trouble or in harm's way, I thought for myself, particularly attacking Israeli foreign policy and stuff, whatever, you put a mark on yourself, you know. But I believed in it, and I did it, and I knew the risks were great. And I always thought, though, if someone called or said anything like, the Korean government, etc., then the cat would be out of the bag, it would be done, and all I would have to do is say, okay, you know, it's satire, I'm the author, it's got nothing to do with you, you know, okay, here we are, on a platter, I'll tell you. And it never occurred to me, and what they said was, because they called back a second time, this government official, and I said that, and I said, it started exactly from this date. I started writing from here, blah, 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 all these things. And he goes, yes. But before then is when the North Korean government commissioned you to start work on it. And I'm sitting there going, how do you refute that? That never would have occurred to me in a million years, right?
That's scary.
But checkmate. How do you... And I actually had nothing to say, and that's when I realised, oh, yeah, oh, shit.
Well,
visions of those McCarthy communist trials and all that stuff.
All of a sudden you're in a McCarthy era witch hunt because the Korean society where, you know, Eugene's a part of in Christchurch, we got called up for a big meeting, which I recorded on my iPhone for an hour and 14 minutes. And you have to hear it to believe it. It's frightening. We got taken up there and sat at a table, me and Mike and Eugene sitting there, and the first half hour is all in Korean. And they're all there, standing room only, these elders from the community, and we're not allowed to talk. And Eugene has to translate to us, and finally the questions start. And I got really heated. Really heated. They weren't having a bar of it. Because for them, the dishonour that there should be a spy among them in their community is dishonour on all of them, with the South Korean government looking down. And there's no point telling them the truth. They don't want to hear it. The word's out. It was utterly insane. It didn't help that Eugene's mum's North Korean and that he's a bomb expert. I'm not trying to be funny. He's a demolition engineer.
Yeah, I know. It's this, like, Eugene, that, and you talked about, I think people should, if they haven't already, watch your TED Talk, because you talk about how he was kind of shunned from that community and the side that you even asked him to stand up. And I was like, come on, man, cut to him. I want to see him in the TED Talk. And I just think that's such an interesting character that, you know, who knows down the line, I'd love to explore with you again, because these are the ones who were standing up and saying, look, that's the person I want to be for my kids, you know, stand up and take a punt. And
yeah,
they're doing
it. I picked that up from you earlier on. The thing, you said something earlier about TED Talks being, you don't want to be told what to say. That's really, really interesting. I got, you know, you get asked to do it. And you're like, what do you want? And there's a theme. I just want you to tell your story. You've got X many minutes. That's how I just went away and wrote. And no one told me what to write.
But you have to turn in a script, right? You have to show them the script and they have to approve it?
Yeah, there's that. Like, I wrote what I want. And because I was very clear, like, I'm going to tell my story. I mean, the reason they have to check it is they can't have people saying things and making things up. The reason they're checking is so that it's verified. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart. So there's that aspect. You have to be able to prove what you said happened, give evidence, which I think is fair enough. I wrote what I wrote, and then I only had one rehearsal, and I made the mistake of, when I was doing it, I was doing it in my head, timing. I had 18 minutes and I stood up there and did it, and they were like, oh, that's really good, that's really good, you're running at 24 minutes, so you've got 3 days to rewrite it down to 18. I tell you, it was the worst week.
Really?
I was so stressed. It was awful. Yeah. I had to, because I've matched, you know, pictures and things to exactly go with. I could talk very freely, easily, like giving up and giving a talk, whatever, but that, you've actually had to memorize that talk, so it fits. Yeah. Now, you really do just have that time.
And it's that time because there's many speakers throughout the day or something.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they've got to run a smooth ship, and it's their thing. You get 9 minutes or 18 minutes, and they have a big clock ticking down in front of you, and that's it. And I went out there because I just couldn't memorize it, because when I had to rewrite it, I just couldn't memorize it. I actually wrote a B speech, which I did memorize, which was explaining how 30 seconds into it, I couldn't remember it because I wrote this really funny speech. I actually walked out there believing I was doomed. It was going to be the most humiliating experience, but I couldn't remember anything because I was so stressed.
Yeah. Well,
the only thing that saved me that morning was talking to my friend who's an anaesthetist, and he goes, you could take this amount of lorazepam now and an espresso. Call me back in half an hour. And I kept calling him back, as now just take a little bit more. And he goes, he goes, now you're on the level. How's your memory? And I'm going, I'm remembering things. He goes, anxiety is stripping of your ability to remember. And I just take a little bit more. He's talking on the phone. So I'm just getting calm to a point that I'm relaxing enough. And all of a sudden, of course I can remember everything. I'm like, okay. I turn that off. People clap for the next person. I put my phone in, turned it off, walked out there, and owned that. Because I wasn't stressed about trying to remember it. Maybe I shouldn't have said what I just said.
No, you're
high, right?
What, but do you know what I mean? It's like
what is love?
What is that? Valium.
It's
I don't really know what Valium is.
It's a
relaxant.
It's
or
a benzodiazepine.
Right?
It's for anxiety.
Yeah.
And it just stops the anxiety and your memory works.
But see the
you could take beta blockers as well, if you wanted. Most people do when they give speeches.
I'm okay with that story. Now that's in context with me. Ted should allow that. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, they don't know.
Yeah. Well, they should at least
don't
say
make that public. That's just for me personally.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not on them. You know?
But I think everyone's like that. And the problem is if you go out there and you don't tell people that you were freaking out, which is normal, it's normal, then everyone thinks, then I need to put the pressure on myself to go out there and rock that party. Yeah.
No, I think for me that was so stressful because I very happy to get out and talk freely, but the whole memorizing thing, like I just struggle to memorize things that really struggle. And 18 minutes of stuff and matching with the clicking thing and having to have changed it just a couple of days beforehand. It was...
It's amazing. Mate, you got
it was terrible.
You got a story, eh?
It was terrible.
You've done a lot. It's amazing because we could just go over. You could talk 3 hours about any of these small topics.
I always think I'm being boring and ranting.
No way.
Not for you know. If I'm going for a walk with my kids, I think this is the stuff I want to listen to. It's giving me a chance just to take my mind off me, and I love that. Okay, we'll wrap up because. I feel like I want to have, you know, we have.
Thanks for making me feel so comfortable.
Try and have another round of this when the chicken thing happens. I'd love to come and pick your brains.
I see what you did there. don't feel any sense of shame for that once it starts. there's an unlimited amount of puns out there when it comes to chickens and birds.
T-shirts.
Oh yeah.
When we get big enough, we'll have T-shirts from Pillow Talk T-shirts.
Maybe the marketing will be sorted by then. I can bring you in a T-shirt each.
Definitely.
Oh man, we'll trumpet you hard out. This is awesome. Just one question before I ask my final overall question. When you get people like me touching base on Twitter, is there a profiling thing you're going through? Like, do you still think I could be a North Korean or South Korean dude who's like, I got to get you in the room, I got to spike your drink? None of those. Yeah.
No, not at all. I actually should be more active on Twitter, I suppose. Someone said something recently. Someone in Sweden said, oh, I notice you don't go on Twitter very much. I get people who, who make contact with you in certain social media. And in the last year, maybe, not because of that, but I just find myself increasingly more wary. If people are really polite, like you were, and asking something, whatever, it's very easy to be nice back if I've got the time.
Yeah. Lots of people reply to me and say, I thought you were spam, because I'm trying to attempt to be real, which is how I talk. In real life, I'd say, hi, my name.
No, it was very friendly and open. I was relaxed about it. I think there was a blessing in the moment before we started making propaganda when I got called into the counterterrorism unit, a sense of healthy paranoia about state surveillance I was always aware of. That's even pre-WikiLeaks and so on. Made it very real all of a sudden, and we were very, very vigilant. And it was a very healthy thing, because once it's happened to you, and when I go to the States, get held for 6 hours and the FBI gets brought in and Homeland Security and you get interviewed and everywhere else, in a way it's good. It's like, okay, I understand this thing's real and how it works, and that everything I ever do and people I come into contact with get stopped to and spoken to. And in a strange way, maybe it's a mistake, because I know it and I've experienced it, I don't worry about it.
Yeah, well, you told that story.
Maybe it's the wrong thing. You know, like, now there's an assumption. That doesn't mean I accept it. Like my mum, here's a good example. For the longest time, she's avoided, she refused to learn to use a computer, the internet-y thing, didn't want to know about it. So the tipping point came where she was the last person in her social circle to not have a touchscreen phone. and they're all telling her, oh, I'll send you a link, or I'll send you a link, whatever. She got really upset. She goes, I'm out of touch here. So come on. So I went and got her a nice new phone for Christmas. She's having a field day. She's having a great day. But literally, she was dropping me off to the airport yesterday. She goes, oh, what's this f***ing thing keeps coming up? I'm like, yeah, I know it's going to be frustrating and stuff. Because, of course, what's happening? It was quite freaky. We're so used to it. But if you think, for someone who doesn't have a digital footprint and they're coming on to the internet and all those things for the first time, she's being asked information for the first time, who you are exactly, your identity, and they want, you can see she's about to be locked in and connected and all of her put together. And it was the first time in a long time I said to her, Mum, you must have heard about this, but it's happening to you right now. You're about to go from anonymity, which is kind of nice, to once you go in here, you're not going to get out. All of the stuff's going to connect together. And everything you do goes into a giant server in Utah. Everything. And she's like, yeah, no, it really threw her, you know. And it'd been a long time since I'd had to. Now, if we want to get an app or something, we do it. We do this, and it's so fast, right? For her, you're having to do all those really basic things. Give her an email account. You know, put in all these different. It's weird.
Because you have to take solace in the fact that it's happening to everyone. Anyone that's online, which is what, 4 billion people, whatever it is, 3 billion, whatever. Everyone's in that server on Utah.
That's right.
And in a way, you know, obviously there's people that are more, and you're probably not as anonymous as I am and Will is.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Once you understand it and you understand that your shit's out there, yeah, you can make the effort. There's encryption you can use.
Tor.
And, yeah, you know, there's plenty of things at your fingertips that you can use for things that are sensitive. I just wonder, I mean, you know, intelligence agencies can hardly believe their luck, of course. They don't have to search anymore. They'll just go on any of your pages, and you're giving yourself, your personality, your thoughts, your ideas and stuff on a plate. On a plate. Knowing that, if you're comfortable going, I'm going to the anti-TPP march tomorrow, that's what I'm going to do, and you stand by it, and you're okay, fuck them.
Mm. Really quickly before you get to that question, Will, just a update on Eugene. Do you have an update
today? Yeah, I had a I'm supposed to catch up with Eugene next week for a beer. Yeah, no, he's good. He's been going back and forth to Korea a lot. He's a really sharp tech. He's got some good businesses going, which are going really, really well, that he's been chipping away at. Yeah, he's a wonderful man, very, very brave man. And
still blocked from church or something as well?
He's banned by the Catholic Church.
And that comes from, like, the top? Or is that just, like, a local thing?
Oh, yeah, no, it starts as a local thing, but, you know, there's a hierarchy with the church whereby you then go to the next person and the next person. Oh, yeah, you know.
All the way to the Vatican or whatever.
You're not welcome. Because what I didn't realize, even though I had these talks with Eugene up front, is there, how's this going to affect your family, your community, church, you know, all these sort of things. You've got to have these conversations. And I don't know these things. We need to go away and think of all the things that can go wrong, and then we talk about them, and so, you know. But again, it's one of those things, you know, he's an actor playing a role. No one who plays Hitler gets called a Nazi in real life and gets sent to jail, right? I mean, surely that's the logic.
I guess it's the power of the film, man. You should take it as a compliment in a way.
Well, yeah, but for the Catholic Church, no, you're not allowed. You're just not allowed to relay those things. And for Koreans, it's actually illegal to even talk of communist ideals or North Korean ideology. A kid, a photojournalist student, got, this was just as we were making the film, should have known from that He retweeted a tweet that came out of North Korea, because there's a certain class in North Korea that does have, you know, the internet. So. 2 years jail. Retweeting a tweet out of North Korea. It should have been an indicator, but I thought, no, Eugene's in an acting role. That's...
It's a movie.
Bloody hell. Anyway. Thanks for asking after him. That means a lot.
It's just kind of like these things happen now online where if you take the time to explain the situation, it means things to people. That's another interesting, more than interesting, because there's life things happening there. I'll just quickly wrap this up. The question I ask everyone, which every week I seem to say, I feel like the whole episode is about that, but your one in particular, the meaning of it all, the meaning of life. If you had to put your pin in the wall on the meaning of life, what would you say it is?
Well, that's an enormous question.
It is a huge question.
I could only speak for me. I think everything's so, I use the word fluid. I think if you get stuck on an ideology or one way of thinking, I think you've given up. And so something that might seem kind of noxious to me, I'm not fixed on anything, I'm fluid. And I'm learning to, more and more, the beauty of acceptance, which I think is the key to everything, allowing some things, being very aware that some things I'm just completely powerless over, and that's fine. I might have symptoms tomorrow or find out something and be told again I have 4 to 6 months to live, and this time around, as opposed to being younger, I find great comfort in knowing that I'll be pissed off briefly and then conduct myself with dignity, and I find great comfort in that. I'll be pissed off because I've got things to do. I mean, I really have things to do, and that's what I want. I'm not afraid of death, but acceptance. In a nutshell, the art of acceptance. That's not to say that I think I don't have control over a lot of things or that things are preordained at all. It's just knowing that some things I'm not going to get around. Conversely, I most certainly do have a lot of power and control over some things. And if after looking at something like the TPPA or anything else, looking at both sides, like carefully, even if you don't like something, you must take the care to look at that as well and take information from both sides at all angles. And then if you have a strong position and feel strongly enough about something, there's something wonderful about the fact that you can stand up, walk outside with other people or connect with them and fight and rage and stand up and be heard. It's not futile at all. And to be seen to do so in front of your kids and take that stand and in front of other people, I think it's the only thing that'll save us or ever has resistance. And we'll always start in the minority. And it'll always be tough and you'll always be scorned. But if you believe in it, you're awfully, awfully powerful. Mm. I find great comfort in that. And that drives me forward, knowing that in some small way, perhaps I can have an effect with things I write or say or do. That's my task.
Love it, man. Hey, Slavko, thanks so much for making time. We really appreciate it. It's our longest podcast yet, but we knew this one was going to go that long because we've only scratched the surface, so hopefully next time we can do it all again.
Next time I'll come in and talk about chickens, you'll be like, oh man, we respected you.
That's awesome.
What is this? But I like the t-shirt. It'll be the quickest podcast you ever had. But I'll be back with something bigger and better.
All right, team, that was a long one, but hopefully a good one. That's what our aim is. Me and Crawford enjoyed every minute of talking to Slavko. Crawford, was it everything you wanted? Because you really look forward to this chat.
This is the most excited I was for the podcast I've ever been. So I watched this movie, and then I went home that day, and I got my girlfriend to watch it again. That's how much I love that movie. If you haven't seen it yet...
go watch it.
Did it answer some of your questions on what his motivations for making it were?
It gave me perspective into the person who made it, you know? I think we kind of know why he would have made it, you know? I think we all know why it was made.
Well, he wants to know if someone's telling you, you know, BS, you should at least know that they are, not that you're part of it. If you're part of it and you can't get out, then you're in, but you know where you're in. Is that kind of roughly? I felt like that was a big thing in Slavko's life so far, is that, look, okay, if you're going to track me, but I want to know that you're tracking me. And that I can make peace with that. If we're all in the Utah computers, then we're all in. You know what I mean? It's not like no one's in the Utah computers. Don't worry about that.
Remember, they said for a long, long time, until Eddie Snowden, really, and outed it all. And that's when eventually... I think they still say that it's not happening.
Folks, that's us for the week. We really appreciate it. A couple thank yous. Crawford, I always thank you to our lovely families who give us time and are still coming to terms with, maybe I'm speaking for myself, this idea that you would give your time away to something else. It's a tricky one, and I try and balance it from week to week. Hopefully you guys can relate to that. If you have other passions, hobbies outside of your normal gig. Podcasts New Zealand, Paul Spain and his crew, great podcasts happening right now. Can't really say enough, really. We're just happy to be doing this as a way to communicate, as a way to keep ourselves feeling good, you know, without the current drama of pills and mind numbing crap. You know, this is just nice conversation that feels right. So I'm going to stick with that for now. Hope you guys do too. We'll see you next week for My Kiwi Life, which is expanding and growing as we all are. Thanks, folks. Have a nice week. We'll see you next week.
My Kiwi Life, let's play the game of life today. My Kiwi Life, the ups and downs we live each day. This is my Kiwi Life. Oh, this is my Kiwi Life. Oh, this is my